Welcome to the Practical Defense Podcast, where you'll learn practical approaches to staying safe in our increasingly dangerous urban environments. I'm your host, Alex Haddix, and this is episode 201, The Legal Aftermath with Marty Hayes. This week, we have the second part of our discussion with the director of the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network, Marty Hayes. Since we just had Marty on, we didn't spend a whole lot of time introducing him or talking about his background. All of that information was covered back in episode 198. Plus, if you haven't listened to episode 198, The Decision to Use Lethal Force, you really need to. This week's show picks up where that discussion left off, and they both contain a wealth of critical information. This time, Marty explains what to do and how to act right after a self-defense incident. We also cover how and when to make a call to 911, what to say to the emergency operator, what to say and do when the police arrive, the importance of getting the right representation, and a whole lot of other subjects. It's another jam-packed episode that is critical for the responsible citizen who just wants to protect himself or herself and stay out of jail. So once again, we have another long episode this week, so we'll jump right into the discussion with Marty Hayes.
This is Dan from Karate Cafe, and you are listening to the Practical Defense Podcast.
The legal aftermath of using a gun in self-defense can be traumatic and expensive. Get help and peace of mind through the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. Network members receive much-needed financial and legal support right after a self-defense incident. They also receive education in the form of DVDs from some of the top names in the business, along with having access to a nationwide pool of attorneys. Learn about membership at www.armedcitizensnetwork.org.
Welcome back. And this week, once again, we have Marty Hayes with us of the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. And what we're going to chat about this time is what we need to do in the immediate aftermath of a lethal defense encounter. So, Marty, thanks again for coming on.
You're very welcome, Alex. I enjoyed the last time, and hopefully we'll get some more good work done here today.
Oh, I think so. The last stuff we did was just amazing. So, to set the scene, somebody has come at us, and we were in dire and immediate and unavoidable threat to our lives, and we defended ourselves, and now this person is mortally wounded. What do we do?
Okay, so we're presuming this is a street altercation, not inside the home, correct?
Yeah, let's start on street and maybe move to the home later on.
Okay, and so let's just narrow down our example a little bit more. Let's say it's an ATM robbery. Okay, you've gone to the ATM because you're out Christmas shopping. You need to get some extra money, and so you're sitting at the ATM, and all of a sudden somebody comes out from behind the building and starts walking up towards you, and you perceive that it's a deadly threat, and you engage them with your gun. Okay.
Sounds good.
Okay, and that's not an unusual occurrence. And it certainly could happen. And it's one of the reasons why we carry guns, is so people don't rob us and kill us when we have to withdraw money from the ATM.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer in the right to self-defense. That's absolutely true.
So let's say that occurred. You know, as the listeners heard last week, you know, you've got to go through that decision-making process. You know, why did the person... What in your mind caused you to believe that your life was in grave imminent danger? Ability, opportunity, and jeopardy as filtered through the reasonable man doctrine. And so we've done that. And we decide, you know, there's really no way to get out of here. My back is up against the wall, or at least it's up against ATM. He's coming at me. He's got his hand in his pocket. He's displaying a knife. He's saying he's got a gun. Whatever it is that you decide that you have to shoot to save your life. So... that's occurred. The guy is on the ground, and you're sitting there with a smoking gun in your hand. Okay?
Okay.
That's our scenario, and that's what we'll go ahead and use as an example. Okay, the first thing that needs to occur is the police need to come along with an ambulance for the guy. And so how does that occur? You know, police don't come in a vacuum, you know. We don't have instant response just because shots were fired. Somebody has to call the police. And what I want our listener, our members to know, our members of the network, is that we want that to be you who call the police. And so the good news is pretty much everybody carries cell phones now. And let me just make a comment here. If you don't carry a cell phone and you carry a gun, you're missing a piece of emergency rescue equipment. That is your communications with the outside world, with the police agencies who are going to come and either investigate this incident or perhaps even give you backup in an emergency situation. So you need to have your cell phone. And people talk about having a number pre-dialed into their phone to 911. Yeah, I'm not sure that's necessary. I think everybody can remember to hit 911. And so I don't have one pre-dialed into my cell phone. We just simply will call 911 and get on the phone with the police. So
okay, well,
we're on the phone now.
Well,
I'm sorry, go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, the other one thing that I don't want to forget about is you mentioned call an ambulance. Why do we need to call an ambulance?
Okay, the reason we need to call the ambulance is one, we don't know if the guy's dead. You're not carrying a shotgun underneath your coat, you know, something that is going to be instantly fatal if you shoot him in the head or shoot him in the chest. You want to call 911, which is actually, it's both, 911 is both police and fire and rescue. And so by dialing 911, you get all of the responders coming. You get the ambulance and the police, especially if you just simply tell them that, you know, there's been a shooting and you need law enforcement and an ambulance.
Now, do you ask for, I've heard some people recommend asking for two ambulances, one for him and one for you.
I guess that's why we're doing this segment, is because there's so much of this advice out there that is just crazy. You know, are you actually having a problem? If you're actually having a medical problem, then yeah, tell them that you're having a heart attack or you're having a problem. You better send two ambulances. Okay, and so yeah, but don't say that if you're not having a problem. You don't want to be. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Alex.
Well, in some of the cases, you may not know if you've been injured because of the adrenaline and the pain reduction from the immediate incident, that shock. So I've heard some people recommend that you want one to come and have at least to have it on the way in case you do need it, in case you've been shot or stabbed and may not know it.
If you're in a hand-to-hand altercation with a guy where there's a knife involved, then yeah, you certainly may have been stabbed. If there was a gunfight where both guns were blazing away, then sure, you know, you may be shot and not even recognize that. But those are so extremely rare that, you know, typically when we armed citizens use a firearm in self-defense, it's a shooting, not a gunfight.
Okay.
So I'm one of these guys. I'm not going to have you call two ambulances. Call 911 and tell them exactly what you need, and that is law enforcement and medical aid or an ambulance. Okay. Secondly, you got to understand that you're on the phone with the police and they are recording your conversation. There are many instances, or there's many examples of people recommending, you know, don't say anything to the police when you get into a shooting. Just shut up and tell them you want your attorney. Well, the fact of the matter is, if you're going to call the police to begin with, then you're already talking to the police. So that advice doesn't seem to work out too good. So you're on the phone to the police. You tell them, you know, I was just robbed, or there was an attempted robbery, there's an attempted rape, whatever the situation is, and in this case, it was a robbery attempt. You know, hey, I was just robbed at knife point at the Safeway ATM. And then if you know the address, if it's on Market Street, that's fine. They'll probably have the address on the screen anyway. Actually, no, it wouldn't be on your cell phone. But you've got to get the address, you know, to them somehow, and tell them that you need law enforcement and medical personnel. Somebody's been shot.
Okay. Now, they're going to start asking a lot of questions. They're like, well, right, who, what, when, where, how? And they're going to try and start asking those details, because they don't necessarily want to send law enforcement into, you know, a gunfight without letting them know beforehand. So they will start pressing you for information. How much information do you give?
One of two things. Either, you know, ma'am or sir, depending on whether it's male or female. Ma'am, the scene is secure. You can go ahead and send police in. Or, ma'am, the scene is not secure. There's still a deadly threat here. And you'll be able to pretty much figure that out almost instantaneously. But that's about all I would tell them. I would say that the robbery occurred. You want to be reporting to the police what crime was being committed that caused you to have to shoot. The robbery, the burglary, the rape, whatever that is. And that's it. And when they start pressing you for more information, they say, man, I'm going to set the phone down, that I have more important things to deal with here.
Okay.
And that's what I do. In fact, I did that once here about 3 years ago on a motorcycle wreck. I was with a group of individuals, and one of our riders went down, and I'm sitting there on the phone to the dispatch, and she's trying to, you know, she's asking all kinds of questions about what's going on. Did she hit her head, et cetera. I said, ma'am, I can't talk to her, and I have more important things to do. I just hung up on her. And I got the ambulance coming and the state patrol, and but I did have more important things to do, and that's, one of them was not get run over by the next car that was coming up behind me.
Yeah. Do you recommend giving a description of yourself as the victim so the police don't come guns drawn and point them at you? Or does it matter?
That's not a bad idea. I know that AU recommends that, and if the situation is calm enough that you can go ahead and describe who you are. You can give your name, and, you know, in my case, I'm Marty Hayes, and I'm the tall guy with the beard, blonde hair, and a blue shirt on, you know, and so, you know, it's not a bad idea if things are calm enough to do that, but things probably aren't going to be that calm, so.
Okay.
So the next thing that's going to happen is if there's people milling around, wondering, and there probably is going to be if it's a public ATM, there's going to be people coming out. The next thing I would do is I would assign somebody else. Say, listen, call the police, make sure they've got an ambulance coming. And so get somebody doing a job and get it, get that backup coming too. Just make sure that that's been taken care of. Then you need to make sure that none of these witnesses to your incident leave. And you need to basically, you know, if somebody looks like they're going to go, sir, could you stay here for a minute and tell the police what you saw? And you can't force them to. You certainly don't want to do this at the point of a gun. But you should be put away by now. And so make sure that people don't wander off. You know, that could be your one exculpatory witness that is going to tell the grand jury or going to tell the prosecutor are going to tell your petted jury that you're justified. So don't let anybody leave if you're going to all help. If they are going to leave, then get a good description. If you can get a license plate of what they're driving, then get that so the police can track them down later.
Okay. So we have fired. The person is down. We've called 911, and we've identified witnesses and asked them to stay around.
Okay.
So law enforcement is now starting to show up. Medical services is starting.
Yeah,
let's
go ahead and say now that the sirens are you hear the sirens approaching. One thing you have to understand is if it's the ambulance gets there first, and probably the majority of the times they do, they're not going to come in right away. They're going to stage and wait for the police if they think that there is any possible threat to them. And in a situation like this, they probably are going to think that there's a threat to them, and so they're going to stage and wait for law enforcement. And if that's the case, then you know, there's nothing you can do about that. I wouldn't worry about it. So the first people that are going to contact you are likely going to be law enforcement officers.
Okay, so if I can jump in here and ask a quick question. Do you
absolutely
approach medical services, or do you just stay where you are?
Meaning, what do you mean approach medical services?
Like when you see the ambulance drive up, do you walk up to the ambulance driver and direct them? Or
I don't think you're going to see the ambulance show up without the police getting there first.
Oh, so you're talking that they're going to be blocks away, not actually drive up to
the ambulance. Yeah, they're going to stage away. They may be, they're going to be probably a block or two away. And they're not going to rush in there until they know that the scene is secured. That everybody with the guns has been corralled, so to speak.
Okay.
So, your first contact is going to be with the responding officers, and it's going to be at the point of a gun. Hopefully not your gun, but you need to understand that you're going to have a gun pointed at you in just a moment or two. What is critically important is that you don't have a gun in your hand, that you have secured your firearm somehow. The best way to do that would be to stick it in your holster. If you know, for some reason you don't have a holster, or you can't get it back in the holster, stick it in your waistband in the back, not in the front where they can see it, but in the back. Okay.
Okay. So this is one. So, this is a good point to make here is that you should have a holster that you carry with you that you can reholster. A lot of the concealment holsters are floppy; they're just a couple of slips of leather, and so they'll collapse.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a something get you know some of the Kydex or something like that that will maintain its shape, so you can reholster afterwards.
Yeah, and then that's what you know all the professionals recommend is either a good Kydex holster or a good heavy duty leather holster that you can holster one handed. I remember you may be on the phone with the police with the other hand. You may be doing something else with the other hand. You've got to get that gun in its holster. And if you maybe you're carrying an ankle rig, or maybe you're carrying a belly band, or you've had a pocket holster somehow. And there are a lot of other concealed carry options out there that are reasonable and viable. So the advice is just simply figure it out ahead of time. So if you have to get that gun out of your hand after an incident, you can do that efficiently. Okay.
Okay. So the officers are now yelling and pointing their guns at you.
Yep. And that is a critical time. You don't want to get shot, obviously. So you simply comply with them and make sure that your hands are visible when they show up. You can even go ahead and raise them above your head, even as they show up, or, you know, more likely than not, you know, when they say, you know, get your hands up, or however their verbal commands are going to be, just follow their verbal commands. They may put you down on the ground in what's called felony prone. Just go ahead and let them do it. They are likely going to try to secure all of the people there at the scene. And, you know, you might have all the witnesses in handcuffs, everybody in handcuffs before they start sorting out exactly what happened. And so just be prepared for that. It's part of the normal routine. It doesn't mean you're being arrested. It doesn't mean that you're a bad guy, okay?
Now, they will probably freak out when they discover that you do have a firearm on you. Do you try and talk to them, or are they even going to be listening?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when it seems logical, you say, officer or officers, I'm the one who called. I'm the one that was attacked. My firearm is in my waistband in the back, or my firearm is on my hip. And they're not going to freak out. Yeah, and then as time goes by and more people are carrying guns, it becomes somewhat commonplace that the cops are running into armed citizens these days. And so they're not going to freak out. They're just going to say, okay, don't touch it, or, you know, or do whatever they ask you to do. And
yeah,
they'll probably have a second officer come up and secure that weapon from your body at that time. If that's the case, that's fine.
Yeah, I wish that was the case here in Los Angeles. But it's not.
What do they do there?
No, I'm just saying is that they won't respond kindly to it. They won't consider it normal or acceptable. They will probably get pretty aggressive.
Well, that's the sad thing about being in Los Angeles, is most people don't or can't carry guns.
Yes, an extremely small minority. Average citizens can't get them.
Right. And so that's one of the reasons I don't live in Los Angeles, among many. But anyway, so let's fast forward to the scene is being secured. Law enforcement has shown up. Your gun is secured. You haven't been shot. You may or may not be in handcuffs, depending on the situation. But at some point, an officer is going to ask, sir, what happened? And this is a critical time. And it's critical from the standpoint that what you say is either going to put you in jail, or it might allow you to stay out of jail. If you say the following words, officer, I want my attorney, then you're going to be going to jail that night. Pure and simple, you have just convinced that responding officer that you committed a crime, that you have to hide whatever action that you did, and so he's going to go ahead and say, fine, sir. You're under arrest for the death of that individual laying there on the ground.
Wow.
And they're going to search you, and they're going to put you in the back of the patrol car, and that's going to be it. And you're going to go to jail. The next time you talk to officers will be at the jail booking area.
Huh. Okay. That's very different advice than I've always heard.
Well, yeah, and that's what's going to happen. If you tell the officers, listen, I want an attorney, I'm not going to talk to one attorney. They're going to say, okay, this guy's a bad guy. He's committed a crime. He already knows his rights. He's probably a previous felon. And so they're going to arrest you. You've got to understand that killing a human being is a criminal act. It's only a defense to the crime of murder or manslaughter that is the justified shooting or the act of self-defense. The defense comes after the charges, not at the same time, at least in most jurisdictions. There are some that have a more enlightened look at the whole situation, and they won't necessarily arrest you just because there's a dead body there, but if it's pretty easily determined that you're the one that shot that person, then you fulfill the elements of the crime of murder, or at least manslaughter, and you can be arrested and taken to jail for that. So, if you want to face that likelihood, then that is your option when the police say, sir, what happened? If you say, I want my attorney, then that's what's going to occur. And I'm going to say that's probably 95% of the time. On the other hand, Alex, if you tell the officer what crime was being committed against you that required you to have to shoot, then you're going to hopefully turn the tables on this prosecution for the crime of murder into a prosecution or at least a adjudication of a robbery which was stopped by a lawfully armed citizen. And how you do that is just simply say, officer, I was being robbed. The man threatened my life and I had to shoot.
Just that simple.
Just that simple. Officer, I was, you know, these two guys were threatening to rape me. They were coming at me. One of them had his hand in the pocket. I felt I was about ready to be kidnapped and raped. I had to shoot. Or whatever the situation is.
Okay.
Officer, I was in this bank, and the guys pulled out guns and started ordering people around, and I thought they were going to start killing the witnesses, so I went ahead to intervene, and I shot them. And that's it. Now they know what crime was being perpetrated that caused you to have to act in self-defense. And so you've got that out on the table, and you can now basically attempt to make sure that they understand that the real crime here is that robbery or that kidnapping or that rape attempt and not your act of after shooting someone.
I've been told that the report submitted by the first responding officer carries a huge amount of weight. Is that true?
You've been told correctly. It does. In fact, it's not only going to be the first responding officer. Everybody on the scene is going to have to write a report. And they get their information first off from dispatch. And so when the dispatcher says that you are the complainant, then that means that you're the good guy. Okay, if you're not the person that called the police to begin with, then they've still got the boxes to fill, and so they're either going to fill them as either witness or as a suspect. But as long as you're the person that wins that race to the phone, and listen, it's not just in deadly force cases. In fact, it's more important in a non-shooting instance where you simply had to display a gun to stop a potential criminal attack. That's where it really gets important that you win that race to the phone, because there's a very good chance that the other person, the person that you went ahead and drew down on and stopped the attack from occurring to begin with, that they will call the police. They'll report this crazy guy with a gun threatened their life. And if that happens, then you're gonna have a hard time getting out from underneath that one. So
be the first to call 911.
Be the first to call. Be the complainant. And then when asked what happened, you know, tell them in very succinct, very clear terms what the person was doing that made you have to shoot him. Ayub calls it the active dynamic. And what was happening? I was being robbed, and I had to shoot to save my life. Oh, officer, by the way, those two people over there by their car, they saw what happened, I think. And then if there's any doubt about physical evidence, make sure that the officers know where physical evidence that is crucial to the investigation is, such as where they might have thrown a knife or a gun or something like that.
So the call to 911 has been recorded. And I've also been told that you should assume that the officers also have recording devices on their uniforms?
Well, that's kind of a tricky one, in that many states also have laws that prevent their wiretapping laws. In fact, they pretty much came about in the 1960s and 70s as a response to illegal wiretapping. But anyway, a lot of states, in fact, my home state of Washington has this law that you cannot verbally record somebody unless they know that they're being recorded. But interestingly, there's no laws as far as, at least as far as I understand, there's no laws regarding video recording. So they may have a video recorder going, but if they're using a tape recorder, they will likely be recording or likely have to tell you that they're recording this situation. So, but anyway, assume that it is being recorded. It can't hurt to make that assumption.
Okay. So at this point, the officers have asked us what happened. We told them in very simple, plain words, not extrapolating on the incident, not and keeping all bravado out of it, just keeping it simple and straight to the facts. Now what?
Well, now is when you want to invoke your right against self-incrimination and ask for an attorney. And you say, "Officer, I plan on cooperating 100% with you, but understand I've been given the advice that I should have an attorney now. If you want to go into the fine details of the case, if you want me to give a written statement or a tape recorded statement, I'd like to have an attorney here to assist me in that, officer. Is that okay?" Of course, they're going to say, "Yeah, that's okay," because they have to say that.
Okay, so at this point, after you've given them the short, direct synopsis, then you invoke your right to an attorney.
Yeah, but you do it in a very respectful, easygoing way. You might even say, "Officer, just like you would have an attorney here to talk with internal affairs, I'd go ahead and like to have an attorney here too to talk with you further, okay?" And they'll say, "Sure," because they can't not say it's okay, because they have to allow you to speak with an attorney before you go on further.
Okay.
Now that might result in you still being prosecuted, or that might result in you still being arrested, but at least you've got the information out that points them towards another crime having occurred.
Assuming they put you in the car and take you downtown, it's just going to go through the normal booking process, and you may sit for a while before an attorney shows up. Do you get a second call at that point? Because especially as a member of the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network, first calls to 911, and the second call should be to your attorney. Or if you're a member of the network, to the network hotline.
No, you need to be calling your attorney. And if you don't have an attorney, then you need to get one. I would not recommend you calling the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network when you're sitting in the prison or in the jail cell or in booking or in an interview room. That's not the time to call us.
Okay.
That might be the time for your wife or your significant other to call us if they need us to help track down an attorney for them. Because you didn't do your job to begin with, and find your own attorney. And that's something that we're happy to do. But you really need to have the name of that attorney in your wallet so you can make that call.
I have a question about having never been arrested. I've never gone through this process. But if they book you and take you, don't they take your wallet away from you? So how would you?
Yeah, but they'll get it for you. Anyway, it's an officer there. My attorney's business card in my wallet. Could you get that for me? His name is Frank Smith. And they're going to look through your wallet anyway. And so, sure, they'll get that for you. But understand something. Hopefully this call is going to be placed long before you're booked. They'll ask you to come on down to the station for an interview. So, they probably tell you you're not being arrested at this time. We'd like to be able to, talk to them at the station, that sort of thing. And so, hopefully you're sitting in an interview room, not in, in red and white striped, jail dungarees. And so,
okay.
Jail coveralls, I guess it would be. And so you need to get your attorney there. You don't need to tell him what happened over the phone, other than that you need his presence at the, at the police department, that you're basically being held after an incident of self-defense. you know, don't tell your attorney that, you know, you shot somebody, et cetera. Just say that, listen, you know, I'm being held down at the police department because of an act of self-defense, and I need you to come down and, you know, to talk with me.
Okay.
Because you've got to understand one thing, that the phone lines are being recorded, and you don't have any attorney-client privilege, because there's no reason for you to believe that your conversation with your attorney is private, because there's going to be big signs right there by the phone that says you are being recorded.
Oh, okay.
So anything you say to your attorney is not attorney-client privilege, because there's no expectation of privacy. It's only when your attorney shows up that you get to go into a room that is not being recorded or not being monitored, and you get to speak with your attorney then.
Okay.
And your attorney is going to know a lot more about this than what you are, because he probably deals with this jail situation with these detectives, these prosecutors, you know, if not on a daily basis, but often enough that they're on a first-name basis with most of them. So.
Okay. So where is a good place to find an attorney? You just go look, check your local bar listings on the web? How do you find a criminal defense attorney? I mean,
I've got
business attorneys, you know, very easily. I do that all the time for contracts and things like that, but I've never had to find a criminal defense attorney.
Well, you don't necessarily need a criminal defense attorney as much as an attorney who's willing to represent you with the police immediately after a self-defense shooting. And that person should be part of the gun culture. They should be an armed citizen themselves. They should be a member of your gun club, perhaps even a relative that you shoot with. Somebody that understands what you're going through and understands that there's not a whole lot that can be done immediately after a shooting to protect you, other than to make sure that you don't give any statements to the police other than what you told them at the start of the incident. So having said that, you know, you need to find a local attorney, somebody within an hour or two driving distance that can come down and talk with the police. Members of the Armed Citizen Legal Defense Network have the ability to tap into our attorney referral network, which we've got about 200 attorneys in now throughout the United States that will do this sort of thing for the members. And we certainly don't have enough to cover everybody in the country, but we're getting a pretty good handle on it. Other than that, start doing your homework, people, and get the name of an attorney that is willing to do this. If you belong to a gun club, speak with the different gun club members. Go to a gun club meeting and talk about it. And if nobody has one, then you might say, you know, why don't we try to find somebody that will help us out? And it might be that you give that attorney a free gun club membership. And so, you know, Frank Smith, the attorney, becomes the unofficial, you know, gun attorney for this gun club. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, that would be almost the optimum thing to do.
Okay.
And we have with the network, we have our members also have what we call the boots on the ground phone number, that if for some reason they can't get a hold of their attorney, or they simply haven't taken those steps yet to find their attorney, then they can call us, and we'll start putting the legal defense in place. We'll help find an attorney for that individual. Or if nothing else, they'll get on the airplane and fly down to where they're at, and we'll find one there. But that call should not come from the jail. It's recorded, for one thing. Nothing that any of our members say to me is a privileged attorney-client privilege. I can be subpoenaed to court and be made to testify as to what you told me. So it's better off if your significant other calls me to begin with. So
now you've called your attorney and you have to wait for your attorney to show up. Then is there an immediate interview process, or do you sit for hours or days, or what happens?
Well, the other thing that needs to occur, and we kind of alluded to this earlier, I believe, in that you need to make sure that you're checked out medically, okay? Make sure that you either do a self-assessment. If you had a physical altercation, then there's a good chance you had been punched or kicked or whatever. And while you might not be really hurting, that is evidence of the attack against you. If you've got a knot on the back of your head because somebody punched you in the back of the head, then you want that documented. And so At that point, you might ask for an ambulance or EMTs to come and check you out. And with a large jail, they probably have their own medical staff there. Make sure that any injuries that you have on your person is documented in the jail records, the intake records, okay? Suspect is complaining of headaches because he says he was punched in the face. That's good to have documented because that might be the only evidence to show that you were in fact the victim of this assault that occurred. So that's one more step that we need to do until we start the long drawn out process of either facing criminal charges or not.
Okay. I'm told that a lot of the times, whether or not things are pushed through either as a legal self-defense or manslaughter or murder, depends upon the prosecutor, depends upon the DA.
I would agree with that. The prosecutor has a huge amount of power to decide whether or not you're going to be charged with the crime. Typically what happens now, you've got two different systems. One is the grand jury system, where if the police believe that there's a likelihood that a crime was committed and that crime was a felony, then they will forward the reports to the prosecutor, and at some point the prosecutor will run the incident by the grand jury. If this is the case, and I don't know how many states in the union have the grand jury system, but if this is the case, then you might find yourself indicted by the grand jury for a felony crime. Interestingly, many times you don't get to go in front of the grand jury and tell them what happened. They basically are told by the prosecutor what happened, what was said, etc. But sometimes you actually get to go in front of the grand jury and testify. And if that's the case, then you need to be working with your attorney to make sure that your testimony is clear and concise and that you don't say things that you, A, didn't mean, and B, aren't true.
Okay.
And so that's the one system. The other system is basically just, the prosecutor can file charges against you on his belief that you've committed a crime. He will explain to the judge the probable cause. And in the case of self-defense, the probable cause is you intentionally shot this person and the person died. And so that's really all that the judge needs to know. The judge typically doesn't look at possible defenses to that crime. And so that's how that prosecution goes down. If you're not arrested and not booked immediately after the incident, then you're way ahead of the curve. In my opinion, the single most important thing that can occur after self-defense shooting is that you not be booked and charged with a crime. And this goes against the advice of many attorneys out there that simply say, we don't care about being prosecuted. What we want to do is we want to defend you in court, and so make sure you don't say anything when the police ask you what happened, because that way they get to defend you in court.
Is that just for monetary reasons?
I don't think so. I think it's because that's what they're familiar with.
Okay.
They don't understand the fact that you're actually innocent of any criminal charges here. You didn't commit any crime because you have the legitimate defense of self-defense, and they're used to basically defending people that have committed crimes and have basically talked themselves into jail. So we want to avoid that if possible, as we've discussed earlier.
And of course, my favorite two words that I use on the show repeatedly are awareness and avoidance. And so this is being aware of what the repercussions are and avoiding the initial accusations to begin with.
I would agree with that. Let's just take this conversation a little bit further and explain what will happen if you are prosecuted. If you end up being indicted and prosecuted, then your trial will likely happen in 3 to 6 months. There's a speedy trial rule in all jurisdictions that you have to be taken in front of the judge, in front of the jury, and tried quickly. It's usually your best option is to not be tried quickly, but to let it drag out a little bit. And so if you can get a continuance, that probably makes sense. And for the most part, the continuances almost occur on a normal basis. But you've got some work to do to defend yourself in court. And one of the things is that you get a you get an attorney on board that actually understands self-defense cases as opposed to simply a criminal defense attorney. It might not be your own attorney that you've hired. You may have to go outside your own little network of friends and family and find that self-defense attorney. If that's the case, even if you're not a member of the network, give me a call. We'll try to help set that up for you. But other than that, basically you need to defend your act of self-defense. It becomes a case, what's called the affirmative defense, which means that you have to put on the burden of proof. You have to explain to the jury why what you did was reasonable and within the law. And that takes a preponderance of the evidence on your part. So that basically becomes almost like a plaintiff's case in a civil trial, where you have to show to the jury that what you did was reasonable under the circumstances.
So instead of them proving you guilty, because you're innocent until proven guilty, you flipped that. You said, yes, I did do it, and I had every reason to do it, and here are my reasons. So you're admitting that you did it, and then you have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that it was justified. Isn't that a much more difficult
Absolutely.
Case to do?
Not if you've got the credible facts on your side. I don't think it is. I think it's that difficult at all. What becomes more difficult is if the incident hasn't been effectively investigated by the police or by your own investigator. If you don't have an investigator out recontacting all of the witnesses, everything that occurred, investigating the individual who you shot, their background, find out if they've committed other robberies like this. I mean, if you can find out that they've committed three other strong-arm robberies in the past and have a criminal record, that is going to go a long way towards convincing the prosecutor that you are likely within your rights to use self-defense.
Okay. So you mentioned it could take months, maybe over a year, to build the case. How long would the actual court trial take?
On a murder case, you're probably looking about a week. If it's a simple one, if it's a complex one with all kinds of evidence, ballistic evidence, expert witness evidence, you're probably looking at another week to 2 weeks.
Okay, so it's months, year plus in preparation for 5 to 10 days actually in court.
Right.
So I think we have a really good understanding of that. How is what we just discussed in terms of an event outside the home in a public area, with the ATM being the example, compared to an incident at home?
Well, the good news about an incident in the home is that there's kind of a presumption that you've got the right to protect your house and your personage inside the home. And so if you use deadly force in the home, it's probably more unlikely than likely that you're going to be prosecuted for that, unless there's some weird anomaly that of the incident, like the old poor advice, if you shoot them outside, drag them in and put a knife in their hand, that kind of thing. But inside the home, we just don't see that many prosecutions for legitimate acts of self-defense inside the home. Perhaps in some of the more notorious anti-gun states, you're still seeing that, but not out in the real world here.
Yeah, I've heard from law enforcement here in California about various rules and guidelines and things like that. And one of the big things they talk about here in California is violent entry. And violent entry means like breaking the glass, kicking in the door, things that show, extreme violence, which goes to mindset and cause, versus saying coming in through an unlocked door or picking the lock or something else. In California, it seems to be a difference. Is that generally the case across?
Yeah, I think so. But understand something, that most of the violent home invasion type robberies don't start with a breaking. It starts with you, the homeowner, opening the door after somebody rang the bell and knocked on it. And so you open the door and they rush in. Well, there's no evidence of any violent attack at that point.
Okay.
And so, that's happening more and more. In fact, I say that it's more likely than not that's how you're going to be attacked inside your home, would be a takeover home invasion where they simply knock on the door and you voluntarily open it for them. Yeah, that's kind of a hint that that might not be the best approach for you to take until you've identified the individual who's ringing your bell or knocking on the door.
Yeah, I'm a huge advocate of do not open the door, talk through the door, stay, you know, 5, 6, 7 feet back and off to the side. I say that repeatedly whenever I can. It's like, do not open the door.
When you say, who's there? And they say, can we just use your phone? Our car broke down. That's a clue that that you're in trouble if you open that door.
I've actually had people say a neighbor. So my response to that is, which one? I know my neighbors. I know them by name. So if the guy says, it's your neighbor, which one? I'm down the street. Don't want any. See you later. And that's the end of the conversation. But yeah, I've actually had them say your neighbor when they come to my front door. It's usually people trying to sell something. I don't think a criminal's ever come to my door.
And here's the thing. If you think that you are just auditioned for a home invasion, takeover, armed robbery, if you look out, you've looked out the door and you see two or three guys there, and you say, oh my God, they were going to break in if I'd open that door. You know, do society a favor and call the police and report that. For crying out loud, maybe in a half an hour they're going to do it again to somebody and end up killing somebody. You know, it's not going to cost you dime to pick up the phone and say, listen, a weird thing happened to me just a few minutes ago. You know, these guys came to my door, et cetera, et cetera. And so you report that, and maybe what you've told them would help, would help get them convicted at some point in the future. I guess I'm still a cop at heart, Alex.
So other than the location being inside the home and by the fact that you're in your home, you have a better defense right from the start, is there anything that you need to do differently about the home than you would, say, outside? Are there different methods, tacts, ways to explain things to law enforcement, to make the phone call? Does anything change?
I don't think so, other than it should just be a little bit easier all around. You're still going to be calling the police, perhaps on your landline instead of the cell phone. You're going to explain that you were just the victim of a home invasion robbery and you had to shoot somebody, send the police and send the ambulance, that you're covering the guy, you're the homeowner, give a description of yourself, and tell the police that they've broken down the front door is wide open, and take it from there. And at this point, it's probably not a bad idea to stay on the phone with them, just so when the police show up, you can help them get into the house or you yourself get out of the house. And so, again, you don't get shot or the police officer are not put at a higher degree of risk.
That brings up a point that I was just thinking about as well. What about evacuating your family after the incident, getting them over to a neighbor's house? And do you wait for them outside or inside?
I don't know. I guess I've never really thought that out since I don't have a family with kids and such. I've never really worried about too much personally. I think I would have a hard time, though, putting my family outside the home if I felt it was safe inside the home. And I think I would just have them go into their rooms and or all gather in the family room or something and stay there, and you guard the door, and you make sure that nothing happens to them. I guess that's my gut reaction to that question, Alex.
Okay. Hey, cause I've heard a lot of stories reported by the news, which doesn't make them credible, with law enforcement coming in and being a little strong-handed, because they're walking into a home or a building that they're not familiar with. There's been a shooting. They don't know if there are other people in the house still, and they'll still want to clear it. And the last thing I'd want to have happen is, you know, my 7-year-old to be in her bedroom and have some officer, you know, kick in the door and sweep the room with his pistol.
Or his M4 now.
Yeah, M4 or shotgun.
Yeah, they've all got M4s now with EOTechs on them.
Those are nice.
And we all paid for it through our Homeland Security grants. But okay. That's probably a subject for another show.
So, Marty, we brought up the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a member. I think it's absolutely fantastic. It's a wonderful organization. I think everyone should join who carries firearms for protection or even empty-handed. It's incredibly useful and absolutely necessary if you intend to ever defend yourself. What is the best way to get a hold of you guys?
best way would be through our website, www.armedcitizensnetwork.org, and go from there. You know, we've got a wealth of information on the website, and you can spend hours reading things, you know, about us and who we are and what we do. So that's the best way to go.
Yeah, there's a lot of wonderful free information up there that you can download and read, and it's, again, fantastic organization. And Marty, thanks for coming on again. I think it's been extremely educational, and I think everyone's going to benefit greatly from it.
Well, thank you again, Alex, for inviting me on. And if you have a topic that you think I can help explore, then certainly let me know, and we'll do it again.
Absolutely. Okay, thanks again.
You're welcome.
Gun Rights Radio Network has the best pro-Second Amendment, pro-gun rights podcast available on the net. The podcasts are absolutely free when subscribing using iTunes or Zoom Marketplace. Or if you want, you can just listen from the website. Make sure you visit gunrightsradio.com to subscribe. Podcasting freedom, one episode at a time.
Welcome back. Now, thanks again to Marty for taking the time to share his insight with us. If you haven't listened to the first part of the discussion, go back and check out episode 198. This week's episode and 198 are the ones you will want to keep and refer back to on a regular basis. Also, if you want to check out and join the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network, you can find them on the web at armedcitizensnetwork.org. There's also a link in the show notes. I'm a member, and they rock. Now, since we had another long show this week, we don't have a summary or email. And that'll do it, actually. As always, you can follow my daily tips on Twitter and Facebook. On Twitter, I'm Practical Def, and Facebook is Practical Defense. I also invite you to check out my book on practical home security. It's currently available in Dead Tree, commonly known as paperback, Kindle, Nook, and iTunes editions. Autographed copies are available on my website. The URL is alexhaddix.com/book. If you have any tips you'd like to share with everyone, a comment on a show, or if you would like to suggest a topic for an upcoming episode, write into podcast@alexhaddix.com. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe.
Hey everybody, we are
Lady Annabellum.
Before every show, we practice. Gotta be prepared.
Exactly, and the American Red Cross wants us to be prepared too. Prepared for disaster.
Just take 3 steps to be Red Cross ready. Create a disaster supplies kit with water, food, and a first aid kit. Make a family communication plan and listen to local radio and TV reports to stay informed.
It's that simple. To learn more, visit redcross.org or contact your local Red Cross chapter today. Thank you so much.
You can now hear Gun Rights Radio Network while you're on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. On-demand news, talk, and more on your mobile phone. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, and no memory or storage wasted. Available for your iPhone, Android phones, or your BlackBerry. Downloading is easy. Go to Stitcher.com or check out your app store. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Gun Rights Radio Network shows can be found under Sources.
Practical Defense is a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network at gunrightsradio.com. And that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense podcast. For questions, commentary, and topic suggestions, send an email to podcast@alexhaddix.com. That's podcast@alexhaddix.com. And if you ever want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexhaddix.com.
Kevin MacLeod.